I'm going to start with a very brief introduction. Elizabeth is an old and dear friend and spiritual compatriot. We lived together in community for many years. And for about a year, we co-hosted an internet radio show. So we did a different topic every week, and we discussed it together and then took questions for the rest of the hour. But we did lots of other things. We did lots of practice together, and mainly, or of particular relevance to this call, we both had various experiences of very intensive collective awakening that is a big part of the foundation that compelled both of us to keep sharing for all these years, because that was 15, 20 years ago now. So it's a joy for me to have Elizabeth here. The organization that she has founded and works with is Evolve World. And under that, there is something called the Interbeing Monastery that we'll talk a little bit about today. They publish a magazine, which, as far as I know, is only published in German. Her work is based in Germany, although I think it expands beyond Germany, of course. So maybe, Elizabeth, to get started, I would love to ask you a little bit about this phrase collective awakening and how you relate to it today versus how we might have related to it years ago.
That's a great question. It's funny because when you use the term collective awakening, I went, huh. So what are we awakening to? I think that's a really important question. Is it, what does it, I mean, it's not simply what does it mean to awaken, but if we have a collective awakening to what? I mean, some people would then grab the term enlightenment, which is the way it was referred to in the context that we were in together. But also that's a little wiggly term. What is enlightenment? Which ended up being the title of the magazine that our community produced. What is enlightenment? What is that? And I would say it's that this collective awakening to is an awakening to an intelligence that is in the fabric of existence. That it's that we are awakening to something together that is a shared intelligence. And it's a shared being and knowing and loving. Let's put it that way. That one recognizes one's non-separation from life, from the life process, from living, and that living doesn't just happen within our bodies, but it happens within and between and beyond us. And that permeability to presence, to being present together, to being present in life together, not as separate beings, but at a dimension that is not separate. That would be the first thing. And then that coming from that, there's a way of knowing that transcends the individual mind, that creates a different kind of collective learning, a learning that is held in the group and also in the depth of the individual. And that it also reveals a dimension of love that one experiences as the fabric of the cosmos itself, that we are actively participating in and feel responsible for. So that would be, that's my orientation to this. And these things are not special spiritual things. They're about the fundamentals of life itself.
I think I want to just build on what you're saying today, because you were initially defining awakening as a connection to the, we could use lots of terms, but sort of the universal source of wisdom and love. Maybe say something like that, which I am in complete agreement. So awakening is that. Awakening means realizing that there is a bigger inherent source of consciousness and of love and of being that's in existence itself. And that awakening a person can have, and historically people have had as individuals. And so this the idea of collective awakening implies, my orientation would be that it's an experience of collective awakening. If a group of people is having an experience of collective awakening, they're awakening to the same inherent being, the same source of being that an individual might. And yet, because the experience is happening with other people simultaneously, there's a difference. That certainly has been my experience, that there it aspects open up in that collective experience differently than they open up in the individual experience. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts about the difference between an individual's awakening and this collective awakening.
I find it interesting. I find it really fascinating that we, and I'm sure everyone here has had deep, deep experiences of meditation, that we awaken to unity, right? We awaken to non-separation. We awaken, we realize there's a dimension of who we are that is connected to a source that is absolute. There is no relation there. It is absolute. But then we feel ourselves as separate individuals. But I mean, we don't, that ground doesn't extend to the person sitting next to us in meditation often. I mean, some people are blown out, their hearts are blown out, and they experience profound non-separation, but often this unity experience is a unity of one. I'm in unity with the cosmos, with the universe, with the absolute. But that doesn't somehow doesn't transfer to that we are in this together. At the most fundamental level, even though intellectually you could say that, there is not an experience of that at the same time. And I think that that's part of what collective awakening brings. And I think it also opens up, it opens up a dimension of reality that is between the physical and the absolute. Because the practice of engaging in this interbeing is done through language. And the language is evocative and creative. It creates a space. It opens a space between us that actually changes the way that we have been taught to perceive reality. Because we're here, we're physical subjects, and then there's the absolute, which is pure spirit or emptiness or the all underneath that is also nothing. That paradox, but the space in between that is in Western culture, empty, or not empty in the sense of spiritually empty, but there's the physical and then there's the absolute. But what about what connects the physical to the absolute? And one thing that one discovers in this interbeing work, which is what we call it, is that there is a creative dimension that becomes available to us together, that is a synergetic intelligence, an intelligence that wants to integrate and has wants to create wholeness out of diversity, not in ways that flatten out the diversity, but that brings it together into a new whole. And I think that that's yeah, that's a different that's different from, I think, the individual and the work of an individual's awakening.
And I guess what I'm hearing and what you're saying, there's a lot of different things we could go on, but the one that I'm thinking about right now in relationship to interbeing is I'm hearing what you're saying is that when a group of people has this kind of awakening experience together, inherently, first of all, inherently other people are included from the start. Because you're not, it's
Right.
not, you know, it's, you can't not be, they can't not be because they're all there. But then you're going on to talk about interbeing, which has to do with, as I understand it, and as I'm hearing from you, it's the relational space between us that is largely navigated with language when we're doing this kind of intersubjective work. And what you find, and certainly this has been my experience, is that you begin to see how language can be used in ways that, as you said, open the space. I might also say enliven the space, that language can be used in a way that seems to, and earlier you said, you know, what are we waking up to? And I guess the other question you could ask is, who's waking up? Because in that intersubjective space, there is this sense that there's an awakening of a collective consciousness or a collective awareness or a collective being that, as you said, it wants to create wholeness. It maybe wants to create wholeness more than the individuals involved. It isn't simply an additive process of everybody's individual interest and wholeness coming together. It's actually a different order of being that emerges between us. And I would love to hear you speak more about that in relationship to the work you do with interbeing or however else you want to explore it.
Well, I would speak about it as a co-conscious creativity. That what one begins to experience, and I think this is the edge of this, is a shared consciousness, a shared intelligence. And it's interesting. I was part of a meeting with some of our closest practitioners just the other night, and when in this dialogue, when in this dialogue in which the field of interbeing is awakened, open, and there's the individuals in it often are not able to track the conversation. I'm bringing this up as a way of making a distinction. That something is that one has that through one's willingness and intention, and depth of curiosity, that one becomes a vehicle as part of a group of people, but it's not about the group. One becomes a vehicle for your own experience and knowledge to be used in an orchestration and that synergizes your experience with the whole that is possible in amongst the participants. That there's a way in which the life force of this intelligence, you mentioned aliveness, the aliveness of the space, that this livingness of the space had, with its intention of creating wholeness, works through the individuals in in such a way that a whole is created that the individuals don't have control over. You can back out of it, of course. You can say, I'm not doing this. It only happens through freedom of choice. But there's a giving of oneself in a way that is beyond oneself, if that makes sense. And at the same time, you notice more and more that what you're that things that are coming up in your consciousness as you're engaging, it is what someone else is about, is what someone else refers to, that we begin to find more and more coherence in this intelligence and more capacity to allow it to come into itself through us and resolve difference, not in a way where everybody agrees, and this is really important. It's not about agreement. It's about a kind of a resolution of paradox that allows things that can even be very polarizing to be held in something that is much deeper, that is a deeper field of consciousness and awareness.
So I just want to take half a minute to relax and personally, I wanted to just take half a minute to appreciate how much I'm enjoying talking to you and how wonderful it is for me. Recently, Elizabeth, on this topic, I did an event with Peter Mitchell and Anne Sweet, also from our previous community. And I had the same kind of experience that I'm having now, which is there's just a lot of wonderfulness from our shared history that I become in contact with in interactions like this. And that's always a nice thing to really come back into contact with the very best parts of our shared history, which included what you're calling interbeing, which in our previous community, we spoke more in terms of intersubjectivity or a higher we. You know, these are words for the same thing. I tend to use the term betweenness now when I'm speaking of this space. But on the one hand, there's tremendous value in collective work, also because it has a kind of alchemical effect in which we can be opened up to new vistas of possibility in the presence of others, that these gatherings can sometimes just create space for us to have individual realizations. So, in a sense, it can fuel our individual growth on the one hand. And on the other hand, as you're saying, it also makes things possible between people. And this is what I was remembering, because we were always, back in those days, we were always very connected to the global possibilities of this kind of intersubjective awakening. What could happen if this became a way of being that was utilized widely, and could be brought into various contexts? And I know that that's continued to be a part of your work, especially with things like the One World Dialogues and your magazine, Evolve World. So I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to what you see as the, I don't know, bigger human possibilities and advances that could come from this kind of awakening.
Sure. I mean, I think if you look at what has or where the some people call it the polycrisis that we're crises that we're in the midst of, or the meta crisis, the meaning crisis, it's one after another crisis, that those arise out of a profound sense of separation, right? That these are this insistence that the physical is the only reality, and yet it's not even valued that much. I was thinking about that recently, that it's like science says that only the material is real, basically. It's all random. And, evolution was random, and material reality is just stuff. And this opening to a different dimension of reality that is non-separate, while maintaining our individuality and maintaining the preciousness of our individual experience and lives, is allows us to meet human to human in a connection that is before separation, so that we meet out of the reality that none of us is separate, that we are interdependent, we are intertwined, we are entangled. And what it would do, even right here, right now, to just take a moment and to allow your awareness to open to your presence here, and to our presence with each other. And to realize that, to really recognize and sense into the space that we're creating together here. If we met in a place that starts with non-separation, rather than starting off, here I am, and there you are over there, then it's everything shifts. I think that this is, I mean, when the community that we were part of collapsed, a few of us met in India and said, what is it that makes, is there something, how do we benefit others from what it is that we've learned? And I think that's part of what spurred our interest in doing One World Bearing Witness, which you were referring to create global events where spiritual leaders and activists and people who are working for change could come together in a space that was holding this kind of depth and recognition. But it's a different starting point, and I hope you can get a sense of that. You probably have enough in your experience in doing collective work, you probably have enough of a sense of that, that if we start from non-separation, if we start from together, then the conversation becomes a different conversation. We're not talking, we're not othering each other. And yet, and this is what I mean by the way that interbeing works with paradox. It's like one feels more oneself and one appreciates the other person and the others deeply as themselves, as a mystery to you. And yet at the same time, the ground is non-separation. And I mean the way development works at a cultural level is that it takes, if you look at the emergence of Christianity and you know, regardless of what you may think about the Christianity itself and what has happened with it, the shift that they created in culture had to do with small groups of people who were doing radical practices of love. And the kind of creating spaces for practice that permeates our world space is part of the potential here, I think.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. And I think it's wonderful. I'm thinking about, well, let me back up a minute. I'm thinking about what you said about paradox and about the fact that this is not about agreement, which on the one hand, it's subtle and complicated, but I was remembering a time where there was this kind of intersubjective emergence that always stuck with me from years ago, and I've never forgotten it. And it happened in more bizarre circumstances, in the sense that this was a circumstance in which I had done something wrong.
Uh-oh.
And whatever it was very wrong. And I know it was my typical having done something wrong, because periodically I would get sick of the fact that we weren't getting enough done. And then I would start these big projects without any plan for how it was going to get executed, and then I'd be in big trouble. But I always felt like at least we're getting something done. So I was in trouble for having gotten something going that I didn't have any plan for execution. And we were going to have a late night meeting to straighten me out, which is always a terrifying event. And so we would get together at like 11 p.m., me and five or six other people, and we were going to, of course, I go into this meeting ready to defend myself. You know, I had all my excuses as to why what I did was justifiable. And we sat down and talked, and we just started talking, and something amazing happened in this particular meeting, which is we all got lifted up into a higher view. And I suddenly could see perfectly well exactly where I was wrong. And I could see perfectly well exactly where everyone else was right. I could also see where everybody else was wrong and where I was right. And we all met in that within about 15 minutes. And our history was that these meetings would generally go on for hours. And it was 15 minutes and it was over. And when it was done, we just sorted it all out. And I remember thinking, God, if we could really enact this kind of coming together, because what characterized it was, for whatever reason, we all fell into a space where we were more interested in determining what was actually true than we were in upholding our position. And the level of vulnerable undefendedness was just extraordinary. And I just think, God, you look at the world we live in, and you think if there were practices that could support people to enter into states of vulnerable, undefended interest in the truth, it feels like it would be, I don't know, I can't think of anything we need more in the world than that. And so I bring that up because I'm sure, Elizabeth, that's part of the experience you've had and foster.
Yeah, we have something that I mean, I remember similar and different experiences to the one that you're speaking about. But we've started something recently called Interbeing Tea Dialogues. And they combine the kind of formality and ritual aspect of tea ceremony, but that's to create a sacred context, to create a liminal space or a passing through from here we are just talking together to this is we have an intention here. People bring up issues that they are struggling with and or that they're fascinated by, things that they're fascinated by. So it could be, I just watched something on YouTube and this guy blew my mind and I'd like to share it with you. But it also could be, I'm struggling in my relationship and this seems to be what's going on, or I don't know what's going on, or I'm stuck in my meditation practice and I don't quite know how to go deeper. So it can be anything positive or negative, and every member of the group brings an issue or brings a question for them that is alive, that it is meaningful. And the group then selects one of those as being the most appropriate question for the group as a whole at this moment. And it takes that in itself takes vulnerability. But then the questions are opened up to pierce through to the most existential level. So that it's not about finding out what's the truth here, or what's going on with Jeff? But it's like, how is Jeff's experience actually something that is profoundly human, that we each have a deep connection to? Because when looked at from an existential point of view, we realize that we're not separate from Jeff in that. And there's a healing that happens. There's a wholeness that comes from that. And wholeness and healing have the same root. And it's there's no advice giving. There's no, well, what you should do, Jeff, is get your act together, that kind of thing. Or are you sure you're not projecting onto your partner or whatever? It's not about advice giving. It's about as deeply as possible exploring and sharing the experience or the question that's been brought up. And it's something that we feel, or that we're bringing to people who are new to interbeing. So it's not something it's not something that requires a great deal of background or skill. But I would say that's sort of what one of our new practices is working to do. And I think that that's part of something that I learned in our context together, that you come to realize that it's the separation and the shame and guilt or whatever that gets brought, that one gets hit with or that arises in oneself at these very vulnerable moments, that if you can take that away, then we can really grow and change.
And I can very relate to what you're saying about once you strip away the more superficial layers, you see that we're all the same underneath. And I vaguely remember that from this incident that I mentioned, that kind of underneath, we were all upset about the same thing I was upset about. We were all trying to subvert it in our own ways. And so there wasn't really actually any difference between anybody except, my way was singled out as bad. But mostly just because it became visible at some moment. But when you see that, it is liberating and it is healing, as you said, because you realize, oh, I don't have a personal problem. I'm not personally defective. I am an expression of the human condition, and the human condition has all kinds of aspects. So I think that's very powerful and well stated. And I wanted to mention your interbeing monastery because you and I have talked about that. So you have a new virtual space opening up on Sunday, this Sunday, and it is, as far as I know, open to anybody to join. It's a space for intersubjective or interbeing practice, as well as meditation. And I would love you to say a little bit about this evolution of your work, because this feels like a significant step toward establishing an online space for the continued growth and advancement of this interbeing work.
That is our hope. But it's also motivated by we're living in potentially transformational and definitely dangerous times. And you could even say we're living in times of increasing darkness, if you want to use that metaphor, which if we it, I like to think back to the end of the Roman Empire, just for instance, that after this kind of collapse in what had been civilization up until that time, what happened with Christianity is that they form monasteries. In this time of darkness, they form monasteries. And these monasteries, when you look back now from now and look at what was going on there, they were incubators of a certain consciousness. They were incubators for the development and depth of the individual, the practices of prayer, of contemplation, were geared of confession, were geared towards creating a deeper self-responsibility, self-reflection, and capacity to be a moral agent. And this is what led to the emergence of the civilization that we're part of, which was a powerful shift in human consciousness. We see that it was it 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 had its it it certainly has had its downsides, and we're dealing with that now. But right now, we don't have structures where people can come together and practice. And it's interesting living here in Germany and traveling in a good bit in Austria. The number of monasteries here is astonishing. They're empty. In some ways, the work has been done because we have developed into sort of self-actualizing human beings. But the need for incubators for a new consciousness that begins with the recognition of that one discovers in meditation, of the seamlessness of of consciousness, of depth, of something that is beyond just the mind, that being a foundational piece, but also adding the relational dimension of interbeing and what we call emergent dialogue, that we need spaces that will inculcate a new consciousness for humanity. And right now we have the technology that allows us to connect across the entire planet. And we need more of them. So our idea was to create this space, to make it available, make it possible for people to be free community members and participate and develop and create this pressure cooker. I don't mean that in terms of human pressure on us, but something that is working at establishing in the consciousness sphere of the earth a different response to being human, other than separation and domination.
And you just mentioned emergent dialogue, which I know is a collective practice that you and the people working with you have been developing for years.
Emergent
Go
dialogue
ahead.
is a practice of interbeing. Interbeing opens and occurs in dialogue. What characterizes it is that the group as a whole is one's reference point. It's about shifting one's reference point for response from oneself and one's kind of reflections, let me think about this and then let me join in, and kind of leaning into a perspective that is of the whole. And that may not make particular sense, but you can try it and do it, and you'll see it's possible to go beyond and see with different eyes than just your own perspective. And it's giving oneself to that shared perspective through one's own experience and knowledge that creates the possibility for the emergence of something that is far beyond the sum of the parts. I think that it gives me more trust in the life process to discover that life itself is trustworthy. That there's all this stuff that's going on, and yet there is a motive in life. That it's funny, I was thinking recently, do you remember in Jurassic Park? Did you see the movie? There's a point at which one of the characters says, life finds a way. I think that the mystery that this emergence of collective, intersubjective, interbeing, that is happening now at a time when we need collective connection is a source of profound trust.
Elizabeth, it's just been a joy to talk with you and connect with you. And I feel so much resonance with everything you said and everything that you're doing. And I'm so happy for everyone here who's going to get to connect with you moving forward.
Thank you, Jeff. That's very kind.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.